Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I just persisted with the studio practice. I think I, you know, it connects back to childhood in a way that I have always liked making things. I like being in that flow state. It's, you know, it is a form of meditation, and it's become increasingly clear that it is a way to connect back to myself as a mother, and it makes me more available to my family after I'm done in the studio.
I'm so happy to welcome the incredible painter Caitlin Winner to the podcast today. Caitlin blends classical references from art history with contemporary everyday moments. Her partner and children swim, chop vegetables, and drop spoons in narratives that expose the tensions and joys of family life. Caitlin began painting soon after graduating from Wellesley College with a BA in art and economics. She studied nights and weekends over the next decade with painters she admired before beginning her full-time painting career in 2020. Caitlin's work has been published in Artist Magazine, Studio Visit Magazine, and she is a 2022 recipient of the Martha Boshin Porter Fund. Caitlin lives with her family in Columbia County, New York. Caitlin, welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast.
Thanks, Caitlin. Happy to be here.
Okay, I'm so excited to get in the weeds here with you and talk about your work and your practice. Always like to start with having you bring us back to childhood. I'm wondering if you were exposed to art as an early age, if you always knew you wanted to be an artist, or if that's something that kind of came along your path later on.
Yeah, my mom was a working artist. She worked in the basement of the house that I grew up in. Yeah.
That's a rare answer. I hope 10 years from now, that's a very common answer, but that's a rare answer. That's so cool.
Yeah, she was a primary caretaker, but she also made art. She had a giant loom, and she had all kinds of art supplies that were available to us. We were not allowed in the basement, but she would bring supplies up for us.
Yes.
I have two sisters, so there were three kids that she was taking care of while she was making art. And I don't think I ever connected with the term artist. Maybe because my mom didn't necessarily connect herself to the term artist, but I always knew that I enjoyed making things. That was okay. Clear from a very early age.
So she was making art in the home, but she didn't call herself an artist or say she had a career as an artist.
Right. Yeah. Not as I remember. She would do art shows, like traveling art shows, but yeah, she didn't call herself a painter or an artist, even though she was, you know, making and selling artwork.
Yeah. Interesting. I wonder if part of that was generational or just like exposure to, you know, capital A artists, like as a career, you know, like now we're so exposed to different lifestyles and options.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But I think as a result of that, it's taken me a long time to identify with the term artist, like,
yeah,
as an identity.
Awesome. I love too that she, kind of the basement was off limits to you guys, you know, like she still, you know, like brought the practice up to you. I feel like that's similar to me, like as after my first kid, who was very much a studio kid with me, but, yeah, I feel like after that, it was like, okay, no, you guys can do art, but it's not going to be in my space.
In my studio.
Yeah. So she worked on a big loom. So she was like a tapestry fiber artist.
Yeah, she did. She did. Still does everything. Collage painting. Right now she's doing landscape painting primarily. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she also makes jewelry and sews. She makes pocketbooks, and it's a big range.
Yeah. I love that, you know, love that her legacy is kind of what exposed you and brought you into the art world. Did she you know, kind of, were you exposed to contemporary art? Did you guys go to museums or galleries? Where did you grow up? Were you in New York State?
No, I grew up in central Pennsylvania,
okay,
which is a pretty rural area.
Okay.
I don't actually remember a lot of exposure to art besides what she made in our home, but I was lucky. My public high school had a really strong art program.
Okay.
And I took summer school all throughout high school to try to max out on all the art that was available in high school. And I think that's the first time that I really got exposure. I remember taking a film class and watching Hitchcock and,
yes,
and being exposed to like more classic art history. Yeah. And there was a photography program that was really strong. And it was the first time I started to do anything on the computer. There was like a very early media arts program. I learned Photoshop.
Awesome. Yeah. Definitely can see now that you say that, kind of the influence of photography and, you know, lifestyle photography in your work. So why don't you I would love to have you describe your work for someone listening who hasn't seen it, kind of talk a little bit about what you make and why you make it and how you make it, the processes, the mediums and materials you use.
I make figurative paintings. They've been medium to large, I would say, over the past few years. And the figures are my family. I started these larger multi-figure paintings during the pandemic. And I was interested in doing figurative paintings, and the people that I had available were pretty much my immediate family. And sometimes I would pull a neighbor in. I paint fairly realistically, and I work in layers. A friend of mine described my work to a third party recently, so I'm channeling what they said. My compositions are really carefully considered, and I do use digital in my process for composing the work. I really love color. I make a lot of references to art history. I feel like my work's a little easier to describe than some of your other interviewees.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's really grounded in you know, observational painting. That's how I began. I actually, preparing for this interview, realized that I started painting from the figure when I first started taking night classes. I was painting from model with a palette knife. So I spent a year painting in Cambridge, wow, Massachusetts with a palette knife, painting figurative paintings with a knife. And I still use a palette knife pretty regularly in my process today.
Okay. So, you know, it sounds like the pandemic kind of opened a door for you in terms of your art, how you're thinking about your practice and the time you're putting into it, but then also like the scale of work that you're making. I want to come back to that point, but could you talk about what was going on before that? It sounds like you were taking a little bit of classes, like kind of dabbling, maybe not, you know, just kind of in the growing phase of your career. Were you not making art full time? Like, what's been your journey kind of maybe between college, Caitlin, and 2020? Yeah.
I was just learning for, I don't know, maybe, well, I'm still learning, but it was, I was learning the material and technique. I was just getting familiar with the materials. I knew that I liked painting, and I knew that I liked oil paint as a material right away. Mm-hmm. And I just loved being in the flow of painting. Mm-hmm. So I kept doing it. And I didn't really, I remember I joined a summer program with an art school in like 2015. And I'd been painting for a good 10 years at that point, but the person running that school gave me a critique on my work. And it was something along the lines of like, you have no direction and meaning in your work, and that, you know, therefore you have no direction and meaning in your life.
Oh my goodness.
This person was like renowned for being a really harsh critic, and all the students in the school.
Creativity
scar. Yes. All the students his full-time students were kind of, you know, in fear and awe of him in equal measures. In any case, I think there was some truth there that I was painting I had been painting from the figure. I had been painting landscapes, doing a lot of perceptual painting, just painting literally what I was seeing. And I started painting from photographs at some point, but it was a direct translation. It was like everything that was in the frame of the photograph, I would translate into paint. And it wasn't, it was around the pandemic. I started studying with a painter named Zoe Frank, who does large multi-figure paintings. And through studying with her, that really unlocked something in my practice that it kind of freed me up to be more inventive in the painting rather than just literally painting from life or literally painting from a photograph. And so I started painting from multiple photo references, sometimes putting them together in Photoshop as like with a rough collage. And it really opened the door to narrative painting, to be able to tell a story in my, about my life, about, you know, motherhood and parenting, within, you know, the confines of the canvas.
Now, why couldn't that, critical professor person just say, have you ever thought about narrative painting? Like, why not guide you to, like, there's this whole genre of, I don't know, it's interesting that, you know, kind of that criticism in those moments, that in the moment that they're given, they're so devastating. Like, I remember a particular comment that was shared with me in grad school that in the moment was so devastating, but it has become the fuel, right? To you know, kind of hitch my wagon on. Like, it's like, you know, it was about maternal art and, like, you know, why would you make art now about something that, like, isn't going to impact you later, kind of talking about, like, young motherhood. And I don't know, it's just really interesting that, you know, there are those people, those professors and mentors in our life who we don't like because of how brutal they are, but then sometimes the criticism they give us actually influences our careers much more than, like, a kind-hearted, softer spoken and more encouraging professor.
That's so true.
So that's, I don't know, I hadn't really thought about that until you kind of said that, the way that you just said that about how he was right and you let that kind of shape things. Okay, so how many kids do you have and how old are they now?
They're 2, 5, and 6, boy and a girl.
Okay.
The girl is younger, the boy is older.
So, like, previous to the pandemic, you were babies yeah, and toddlers and really young kids, and kind of just now the past few years, your kids are, you know, getting to a phase where I'm assuming they're in school full time, and, you know, that just logistically, space has opened up for your painting practice to kind of be more influential in your life. I'm curious about that comment about the pandemic, like, kind of influencing the work that you're making, and how 2020 was a big shift for you in your practice. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, the baby phase was hard. I think you're exactly right that we have a pre-K and first grader, and I feel like we're just starting to see the light. Like, when school started this year, my husband and I looked at each other and it was like, okay, we made it. Like,
yes,
they got in the school bus and they went off to school and they're not coming home for like 7 hours.
Yep.
It's, I'm definitely enjoying this phase of parenting a lot more than the baby era.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the pandemic. The pandemic was, you know, soul crushing, and I'm an anxious person anyway. And the pandemic was with small children. We had two school closures and, like, completely uncertain childcare. It was a really hard time. I think it just happened to coincide with, I was at a point in my day job where I was also, like, very stressed out, overworked, unhappy with that work environment. And I think a lot of people during the pandemic like made big life changes, and I quit my job in 2020. That was like, I had been, you know, it was a 7 year, 8 year, I don't know, many years.
What was your day job company that you quit?
I've always worked in tech. I was discouraged coming out of college to, or going into college rather, of studying art in its pure form. So I got a degree in economics, and I also did art classes on the side, similar to high school. And then when I graduated, I found my way into web design and then into user experience design. And I'm currently working in civic technology. I'm designing software for state and local governments. I've been in this job since January. So it's a newish role, but I made the decision in 2020 to leave the previous job for mental health and also to focus on painting. And the timing wasn't ideal, actually, because the pandemic made everything that much harder and more stressful.
Yeah, absolutely. But you were kind of pushed, whether by that opening of mental space because you did leave your job, or another reason, you said that you started working larger scale and maybe pushing narratives in a more personal way during that time. Yeah. Do you think that connection was there, like the leaving of the job and like opening up space mentally and physically for your art?
I think so. Yeah. And I felt, I really felt like I had things to say coming back to that harsh critique that, you know, parenting is so hard and there's so much uncertainty and so much lack of control, that coming into the studio and being able to fabricate these narratives that were 100% under my control, and I could, you know, compose my babies in a way where they were like, you know, balanced and their arms were parallel and, you know, compositionally everything could be in its place. So it was a way to like take the complete lack of perfection that was real life and make something that felt like it was achieving the, you know, level of perfectionism that I think I had in my life before I had kids.
Yes. The illusion of control. Right? I definitely relate to that. Although I had my youngest, or my oldest, when I was 25. So now that he's 11, it's hard to remember what life was like back then. And, you know, when you're like early 20s, it's like, I don't know, like what is even life, you know? I just feel like my perspective now feels so much more authentic than what I thought was my perspective back then, you know? And of course I'm only saying that in hindsight, but just like the groundedness that I feel because of going through like parenting and living through a pandemic, and I don't know, just like the things that have occurred, like especially in the past 5 or 7 years of my life, it's like I just feel so much more open and aware and grounded and like intentional, you know, which is maybe a weird thing to say in response to, I don't know, the chaos and the uncertainty that we all are living in right now, but Maybe it's just because my kids are back in school and,
you know,
and mine are all in school full time now too. So, well, I'm curious about your studio practice. You know, what are some ways that you have worked on it and kind of fit it in, particularly before your kids were in school? Were you like up till midnight painting? Were you working smaller scale? Like, what are kind of some of those like compromises, or, you know, maybe they didn't feel like compromises, but just like limitations that you were working within. And yeah, like I'm just interested in that phase and then how that's kind of changed.
I don't think I took my art seriously as a profession when, you know, until like this pandemic era. Up until then, it was like half hobby, half like mental health. a way to stay sane, really. I rented studio space and we were living in San Francisco right before I had my first kid. It was kind of like this anticipation of like, there's a baby coming. Mm-hmm. I'm going to need some space to like still, you know, clear my head. And yeah, that turned out to be the case that I did need that.
You were like, that was a good move.
That was a good move. I was doing these little paintings. They were small, but I think it was because the space that I was renting, the studio space in San Francisco, is small. Mm-hmm. I was doing small paintings of fruit, which now that I think about it, also allegory for fertility and motherhood, but mm-hmm. like fruit on pedestals, just the light was not very good.
Painting from life.
Painting from life.
Setting up still lives and
Little still lives of fruit on pedestals, like a clementine. I was looking at Uniglo a lot. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was like trying to reproduce that feeling of these like flat shapes of color. Mm-hmm. And I was working small, and I definitely have memories of like needing to rush home to breastfeed because I had lost track of time and I was in excruciating pain.
You're like, this pear suddenly looks so much more engorged than it did before. Oh, wait, that's me, not the pear. Yes, relatable.
Yeah. And I just persisted with the studio practice. I think it connects back to childhood in a way that I have always liked making things. I like being in that flow state. Mm-hmm. It is a form of meditation, and it's become increasingly clear that it is a way to connect back to myself, mm-hmm. As a mother, and it makes me more available to my family after I've been in the studio. Mm.
So it sounds like then you did a cross-country move to New York State. You had another kid. So lots of transition, kind of as your art practice, you know, you were just starting to like think about taking it more seriously, like taking those steps to rent studio outside the home and invest in it. You mentioned that there was a point in 2020 where you kind of thought of, I think the word you used was professional, or like you chose to start thinking about your art in a more professional way. I'm wondering, what were the signifiers, or like what unlocked for you that was like, okay, I think now is the time to start thinking about this differently? Like, was it selling the work? Was it, you know, moving and having more space to work with, and having conceptual ideas that you're just like, I gotta give this more time and space? Like, what was kind of that bridge between, I'm just doing this as a hobby and a mom who needs time to herself, versus I'm an artist. I think I'm an artist. Like, you know?
Yeah, I think it was just the excitement of being able to make these paintings that were telling stories about my life.
So like growing confidence in your own practice.
Yeah, I could see it as, I could see the work that I was making before, that I was playing with some formal ideas. I was experimenting with different ways of painting, mm-hmm. and I was making work that had market appeal. I was able to sell it. I think the shift really came from just seeing my work evolve into something that was more complex and much more interesting and much more exciting to me, mm-hmm. that I wanted to give it space. And I also felt like it probably would be financially okay if I mm-hmm. was just trying to sell my artwork. And that turned out to mostly be true.
Mm. Amazing. This episode is sponsored by the Thrive Together Network. TTN is a virtual community I run for women artists. We have a space right on the network for artist caregivers to connect, and it is truly my favorite place on the internet. Every Tuesday, I co-host a session called Art and Tea, where our community comes together to connect as artists. We share our goals and provide accountability for each other and talk about lots of topics artists deal with, ranging from how to put on an exhibition, organization tips for your studio, ways to manage stress, and so much more. The Thrive Together Network is an inclusive platform for artists, and so much is included in your membership. It's crazy. We offer 2 virtual art residencies a year to help you stay on track with your studio goals. We have an exhibition program called Taking Up Space, those Tuesday art and tea sessions that I mentioned. We have monthly workshops on art business, art writing. We even have a book club. Plus, there's hundreds of artists to connect with from all over the world. Because of the Artist Mother partnership with TTN, we have a discount code for you just for artist caregivers to join the network. You can take $10 off your monthly membership fee for the Thrive Together Network, but your best deal is actually if you sign up for a year with us, commit to a whole year of joining us and joining our programming, and you'll save over $140 on your membership. So head to www.artistmotherpodcast.com/network to learn more and check it out. Membership comes with a free 2-week trial too, so you can truly get in there and see what you think before you actually commit to becoming a member. Just a reminder, on the network, we have a special group for artist caregivers where we have intentional conversations about our roles and identity as artists who are making work and balancing all of the caregiving that we do. We even have quarterly meetups for this group for deeper times of connections. I would really love to get to know you on the network, see more about your work and your art practice, and just connect with you in this amazing, compassionate, intentional, and encouraging community of female artists. We are all about providing resources to help you grow your art career, and this effort is combined with tools and the means to connect with the artists who are on a similar path, who are doing similar things with their careers. So once again, you can head to artistmotherpodcast.com/network to learn more, to get our discount code, and to join the Thrive Together Network. Well, tell me more about your process. You mentioned that you work from photographs, but it kind of sounds like there's some staging or some like setting up of things. I'm wondering from like conception, you know, maybe looking at art historical paintings to figuring out like what kind of scene that you want to work with. I'm thinking of, you know, the swimming on the dock, right? Like you have several of these paintings that are either your family or like a family on this dock. And, you know, we can use that one as an example, or maybe you have some others, but when I look at your work, I think there's this, like capturing of a moment that's happening. Like this feels like just this random moment that is somehow, because of the way Caitlin has painted it and captured it, it feels monumental, right? It feels like holy. If you feel like the kind of the preciousness of it. But then, of course, there's all this premeditation behind that. And so, you know, curious about kind of that journey for you. How do you go from, you know, A to B?
Thank you for that adjective, monumental.
You're welcome.
That's definitely.
Did you just type that down?
I did. Wrote that one down.
That's a smart artist is taking words and holding them close so you don't forget them when you have to write that artist statement.
Yeah, those dock paintings are big. They're nearly life size. I was shooting for life size, but it's kind of hard to get the make the decision when you start a canvas how, you know, exactly the scale of the painting. Mm-hmm. And that the scale was definitely a manifestation of the ambition that I had for the work that I wanted to tell big mm-hmm. stories, that I wanted the work to have a presence. I wanted the bodies to feel, you know, like you could step in, step next to them, that they were, you know, you could be part of the world of the painting. But yes, there is a lot of premeditation, and I've over the years had numerous requests for commissions that I always decline. And I try to explain a little bit just how labor intensive the work is leading up to. Often people want me to paint from a photograph.
Right. They're like, here, just take this and reproduce it. And you're like, well, that's not exactly what I do.
Yes. Yeah. For those doc paintings, I probably worked from 300 source photos over a month or maybe 2 months of sketching, photographing, doing some plein airs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My process is kind of shifted a little bit, but when I was doing those paintings, I was first thinking about the setting. It was very theatrical. Like, first I had the scene, and then I had the actors that I was putting in the scene. And
your husband and kids, right?
My husband and kids. And in those paintings, my in-laws, and then there's like some smattering of friends in there.
Yeah.
And we had friends visiting that I just put in a floaty in the pond. So I needed a figure in the background. They were very willing. I had an idea for the compositions of those that were loosely based on historical paintings. I knew I wanted to have, there's one where there's a figure standing holding a towel open. And I put the towel in because I wanted a backdrop to the figure that was in front of the towel. So it was constructed with some ideas about the composition. But I also, just looking through the source photos, there were some figures, like in one, my husband is bending over to pick something up, a towel or something, and his figure just looked like a Uniulo painting. It looked that the shape of the figure was so beautiful, and there was like light bouncing off the water on his back. Okay, that has to be in the painting. So sometimes the reference photos, there'll be figures that I'm just like, that's it. That has to be part of this painting.
Yeah.
And I have digital collages. They're not seamless by any means, but I am trying to figure out the scale and the perspective. I took all of the source photos between, you know, like 10 and 11 a.m. so that the light was the same on all the figures. There's a painting that's hiding behind me that facing the wall that's been under construction for 2 years. And I just realized this week that the problem with it is that the source photos are taken in from different angles. So I have two figures in the painting that are sitting next to each other, and they're meant to be on the same ground. But in the source photos, one is kind of uphill for me, and the other one is on a flat surface. And I just can't reconcile the two perspectives on the body. It's a huge breakthrough.
Why are there two perspectives here? Why? You're like, oh, there are.
The light is pretty consistent, but it's like the angles of how I'm looking down at the bodies is not matching. So anyway, those things are important, and trying to make a seamless image out of dozens or hundreds of source images.
So you have this concept, you know, you have many concepts probably that all kind of are just floating around. Does the idea come to life when something is happening in your life that you're like, oh, wait, this is like that Botticelli painting that I love. Let me run and get my camera and guys, pose here, flip a towel. Or is it more like, hey, everybody, let's plan an afternoon at the dock and you're going to stand here and you're going to do this. And after I get 300 photos, then you can jump in the water and enjoy.
Right. It's both okay. of those. Yeah. And sometimes it starts in that former scenario of like, this is it. This is the scene. This is going to be a painting, and I'll snap some photos. And then later I'll do a more dedicated shoot where I try to get everyone to cooperate.
Okay. So that photographer's eye, in a way, is really what kind of starts your process. That,
yeah.
That feeling of I'm not just experiencing this moment, I'm looking at this moment.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm noticing and I have my artist brain on, and yeah, like I really resonate with that, but it is a choice to put that hat on, you know, to be sitting there on the bank of the pond and say, do I want to just let that hat go right now, the artist hat, and set that down and just be? Or do I want to use this, you know, as source, as kind of material for, and I know it's more fluid than I'm describing, but I actually have had those moments of like, should I think about my art right now? Should I, you know, like what headspace should I be in? Do you ever experience that where you're like kind of, you can feel yourself like making the choice to move in between those two things?
For a long time, I don't think I could do that. I think I was stuck in the mode of noticing and not experiencing.
Mm.
And there was something about making the painting that helped me do the experiencing piece of it, if that makes sense.
So you're kind of, your perspective is less present and more in your head. But then when you capture that moment and work on it over years in the studio, that is you reliving it and experiencing it. Is that
kind of, yeah. Like when I had my son in 2016, and I didn't connect with the term mother or the feeling of being a mother until like 2021. Mm-hmm. It was many years that I would look around and like, you know, see all the baby stuff. And it was like that cognitive dissonance of, is this my life? Is this, and even after I had my second kid and we're living, you know, in upstate New York, and I'm looking out the window and this like, you know, beautiful maple tree out the window, and my kids are like playing with beans on the kitchen floor. Mm-hmm. Like, is this my life? There was a disconnection. Less so now as they're getting older, and you know, it's just kind of hard to understand babies.
Yeah. Well, and isn't that part of like the brain's survival? Like when you're in survival mode, isn't that disassociation like part of that?
Yeah. Yeah, that could be totally, totally true.
Like the ability, because you can't possibly feel it all because there's so much to feel. So you have to disassociate to continue to be in that moment in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right.
I feel like I've heard that before, like kind of, you know, thinking, like hearing podcasts and stuff about mental health and motherhood. Mm-hmm. And yeah. But then I like what you said about how there are ways to kind of relive those moments and let them linger. And
process them like as, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Being in the present, I think is always the goal.
Mm-hmm.
But with two little kids, I feel like that's, you know, it's a hard space to occupy all the time, or even some of the time.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like your work, at least right now, you're making relatively large paintings, and these paintings take a long time to work on. What does that look like? Like, how much work are you producing at a given time? Do you have different bodies of work that you're working on? Or is it kind of like, I just have this one big painting, and when I'm done with that one, I move to the next one? You know, what is kind of the scope of your practice right now?
I like having multiple paintings going at a time. And if I'm getting close to finishing a painting, I'll usually start a new one just so I have something in all phases.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's to my detriment because I'm not giving myself enough space to do that ideation phase. I'm just jumping into the next thing. I the body of work question's a little, I think the bodies of work happen in like over a set of time period. Like mm-hmm. I was working on the dock paintings in parallel for a year, probably with some smaller things on the side. And the scale has shifted down slightly this year. I worked on three paintings that were, two were set in my front stoop, like going into the house, and one was an interior painting, but those were all maybe half the size of the larger dock paintings. And I'm working right now on a series that's scaled down even more. I started them at a residency where the space was a little bit smaller. So these are like 40 by 30, and they're single figure. So they're not going to take nearly as long. In fact, I think I finished one.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that was probably just, you know, under a month. But yeah, I like having multiple things going at a time. I also like to paint plein air. Still, okay. The spring was kind of an unusual spring. It was very warm very early, so you could be outside when those like bright neon colors were just coming out. And I was really excited about being outside and painting outside. So I think for the whole month of May, I was just doing plein air paintings.
Okay. And where does your work live, you know, once it's completed? Are you selling this straight to collectors? Like, are you showing the work? What kind of path does the work take, you know, after you've made it? And maybe too, to that, like, what are some of your goals for the work after you do complete it?
That's evolved too. I think when I, you know, starting 3 years ago, I was selling almost exclusively through Instagram.
Okay.
I would have people just approach me about specific pieces that they had seen on my Instagram. So I was shipping straight to collectors from my studio. And now it's a little bit of a mix. I'm working with two galleries in New York that have this hybrid model where they sell work online. So okay. The artist still ships it, but they help connect collectors to artists. And I'm still selling through Instagram. I haven't been like actively promoting or selling my work on top, you know, outside of just sharing it on social media, partly because it has been moving and I've had available yeah. wall space in my studio. The larger paintings are harder to store. So those kind of have to move after they're completed. But yeah, I'm working on a couple shows this spring that are going to be group shows, but I'll have several pieces all at once that I'm showing together. I'm excited about that.
Okay.
It's taken a few years to kind of build up to that, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of fortunate because I've worked alongside my painting practice that the financial need of selling work immediately isn't there, which gives me some space. I really actually like it when somebody reaches out and says, this painting, I really want this painting. And I feel like it's, you know, it's nice to send a work off to someone that you know is like really going to appreciate it and love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's interesting the freedom that artists are afforded to really like make that true authentic work that they're meant to make when the financial, you know, peace isn't what's driving them. So I think, you know, just being clear about the fact that you like have a day job that does help financially kind of bring these pieces together is an important thing to mention. But then, you know, it also sounds like, and I don't, you know, mean this in like the wrong way, but it sounds like there hasn't been a lot of promotion that you've had to do for the selling of your own work. You know, not to say that sharing it and, you know, sharing about the journey of making it and stuff isn't its own kind of work and promotion, but, you know, like you're not saying every third month I'm going to have a collection that I'm going to release and I'm going to do all these posts to build people up to it. And then the collection has to sell out in order to, you know, kind of that like grind, which many artists, you know, do when they're selling their work on social media. I don't think I've seen you do that. So it's refreshing that, you know, you've had the kind of fortune that people are coming to you and kind of saying, I can see that this work was made, you know, in such a powerful way. And like, I want this in my home. But I don't know. I think you're like the 1%, Caitlin. I think, I don't think many, many artists are having people knock down their doors and saying, I just need this for my home. I think that's what we all want.
Yeah. No, I know. It's, I'm not complaining. Part of it is, I'm sure, is the subject matter. I know people connect mm-hmm. with the family scenes and there's, absolutely. You know, it brings back memories and it's something that you know, it's a related theme that I struggle with because I paint children and childhood and family mm-hmm. life. I am cautious about the work feeling overly sentimental. That's, you know, it's not what I'm after. I'm not trying to, you know, paint like gooey lovey scenes with like mm-hmm. kids licking ice cream cones.
Right.
Although I do have a painting of a child, you know, licking an ice cream cone.
Yeah,
but there's something about the subject matter that I think connects with people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, a couple more questions before we wrap up. I'm curious, you know, kind of what are some of your goals that you have either for your art career or for the work? You know, like, do you have a dream of making a 20-foot painting? Do you have a dream of showing in the Guggenheim? Like, you know, it can be kind of some of those lofty things, but then also like, what are kind of your immediate goals that you're working on?
Yeah. A museum acquisition would be a good goal, I think. Right now, I think my goals are more personal. There was a period of time after the pandemic where I went through a pretty long period of kind of undiagnosed chronic illness and working through that and understanding my body and what are the limitations of being a parent and being an artist and having a full-time job and, you know, all the other things, finding a space that where I am, you know, taking care of my body physically. It's just kind of become top of mind because without your health, you really have nothing.
Yeah. So what does that care look like for you? Like what are some of the ways that you are prioritizing your health and your mental health and your wellness?
Nutrition is a big one. For years, lived off of refined wheat in the form of Schneider's hard pretzels. That was my studio lunch almost every day. So I'm trying to eat proper meals, starting with breakfast, high protein, trying to get a lot more vegetables, and prioritizing sleep, which these things, you know, if you follow any like health social media, it's sleep, it's nutrition, meditation, taking time to exercise. I think after having kids, I didn't really let anything shift in the rest of my life. Everything was just full speed ahead, like do the job, you know, be up at night with the kids, wake up in the morning, do the day job, then paint, like squeeze in painting on the weekends, like also cook all our own meals and all of the other things that needed to be done. But it's not a sustainable mode of being. And that is what's really become clear. So part of prioritizing my health and well-being was shifting the full-time career, leaving the job in 2020 that was quite stressful, and finding a career, a similar role, but just in a different company with kinder values. That was a big change. And, you know, the kids getting older is helping enormously as well. The childcare is getting easier. School is making things easier.
What about some of the ways that you kind of practically balance that, you know, like not able to be full steam ahead and prioritizing everything at once. I'm assuming your partner also has a full-time job. So, you know, you guys have two full-time jobs, two day jobs, two kids. You have a painting practice that you're pursuing and that is continually kind of increasing in terms of, you know, what time and energy and resources you want to give to it. So, like, what are some ways in your home and in your family that you've practically found just to help balance it all? Or even like, what are some shortcuts that you take, you know, like, what are some things that you've maybe cut out or things that you've added in that help with that maintenance, if you will?
That's a really good question. I don't think we have all the answers yet. my husband does at least 50%, maybe more, of the childcare. And that has always been the case. And that gives me the space to do the day job and the painting career. My in-laws have also been a huge help over the years. They've come during the summers when our kids are out of school and helped with, you know, it's amazing what two extra sets of hands can mm-hmm. do in terms of dishes and folding laundry and mm-hmm. just keeping track of where the kids are and make sure that they're not falling into the treehouse. We need more shortcuts. I mm-hmm. think that's a current goal, is figuring out what those can be.
Well, I think having a partner who is equally, if not more, engaged in, you know, childcare is a big one. And huge. I know not every artist parent is fortunate enough to have that. So if that is not you, definitely work on your advocacy, because you deserve that, for sure. Well, tell me about a moment in your art career where you felt really proud. Like, what was kind of, oh my gosh, did I just do this? Is this really happening? Like, do you have one of those or a couple of those you could share?
Yeah, I struggle with this question a little bit. I think I've been kind of trained to downplay my successes mm-hmm. in some ways. I definitely, when I first started making these multi-figure paintings, I applied to a show. I was like kind of new in building my artist resume, and I just started to apply for things that I saw. And I think it was, you know, right away I got shortlisted for something in Europe that like had the word royal in it. And I felt like, okay, this royal society is considering my work. It must be.
And something a European must be royal society.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
That's awesome. Well, those, you know, that idea of downplaying, I think, is very common. What do you need more of as an artist? Like, what resources do you wish that you had? What has been like a challenge for you that you kind of could have used some more support in? What have been struggles for you as an artist?
Yeah, I still have a little bit of, I have very few regrets in general. But I do, I guess I wonder about an alternate life path where I did go to study art mm-hmm. in undergrad. There was a point where I applied to do an MFA program at the New York Studio School, and I instead took a full-time job in tech. So there have just been a couple crossroads where I wonder, you know, had I gotten that MFA or had I started studying art and painting earlier in that kind of intensive setting, where would I be now? You know, how would my work be different? How would my practice be different? In terms of what I need more in my life, I just got back from a 2-week painting residency that was wonderful. It was my first residency experience. And
what residency was it?
It was at the Vermont Studio Center.
Okay. So you went there by yourself without your family?
Yes.
Yeah, that smile got big.
Yes, they do such a great job. The meals are provided, you have studio space, and you have accommodations. And it's the scheduling is visiting artists, and you get to see the other artists and writers mm-hmm. work. It was like summer camp for artists. Mm-hmm. it was wonderful. And you know, as a mother, I will always take more support in, you know, the departments of childcare and domestic duties. I read a lot of Ezra Klein, and really subscribe to his thesis that we're just all doing it wrong as a society. We're like mm-hmm. raising our kids in silos instead of in a community, and mm-hmm. trying to do everything as a nuclear family is just exponentially harder than if you had more of a group effort to manage everything and more people to depend on.
Absolutely. Well, I certainly hope that, you know, kind of the community building of artist parents and female artists is part of that, like, restructuring of let's share these stories, let's talk about our journeys and, you know, learn together rather than learn the same lessons all individually. Like, I just, mm-hmm. I think that's an important part. So
absolutely.
Oh, Caitlin. Okay. 5 final questions to wrap us up. I want to know, who is your biggest art crush?
Do I have to pick one?
It can be of the moment. It can be of all time, however you want to answer. There's no wrong answer.
I really like Jenny Saville. I mentioned Zoe Frank. She's been a big influence studying with her. Yuen Uglow early on was just kind of jaw-dropping. Susan Jane Walt, contemporary. Bonnard, every time I see his work in a museum, I, you know, nearly faint. And there's a contemporary photographer named Julie Blackman that I also look at a lot.
Awesome. Okay, favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
Okay, so a dream trip is another residency that I'm waiting on. The Hawaii Volcanoes National Park has a month long. It's geared towards family. There's accommodations for family. So yeah, fingers crossed that would be amazing. I land a residency there.
Okay, tell me a film or a book that has been a big inspiration to you.
So recency bias. I just read Celia Paul's Self-Portrait. She was a partner to Lucian Freud and had a child with him. And it's a memoir, I would say, and her story of being a mother and a painter and the support that she had. She just lived her life in a dramatically different way than I thought would be possible. And this was, not modern times. So it was a pretty remarkable story.
What was the title of it?
Self-Portrait.
Self-Portrait. Okay. Favorite meal?
Breakfast. My old self.
Besides
really loved
pretzels.
It. Yeah. My old self really loved a croissant with coffee. These days it's eggs and coffee.
Nice. Okay. And always like to wrap up with giving you the space to give a shout out to someone who supports you in your work.
Yeah. This is my husband and partner. I wouldn't be painting if it wasn't for him.
Awesome. Okay, Caitlin, where can we find out more about you and your work? Are you active on Instagram? What's your website handle? All that.
Yep, I'm CaitlinWinner.com and at CaitlinWinner_studio on Instagram.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to share your work with the community and get this episode out there. Thank you so much for making the work that you make that's honoring art and motherhood and family life and the domestic. And thanks for talking to me today.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for making these podcasts. They're wonderful.
Of course.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.